WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Dr. Roderick Anscombe knows the mind of a murderer. For 2 years, he worked with the criminally insane at a maximum security psychiatric institution. Dr. Anscombe is a psychiatrist who specializes in schizophrenia. He teaches at Harvard Medical School and now heads a hospital ward for mentally ill patients who are a risk to themselves or others. Using his knowledge of madness and crime, he's written a variation on the vampire story in his new novel, The Secret Life of Laszlo Count Dracula. This Dracula is not a supernatural being. He's a regular man who knows what evil is and has scruples. In fact, this Count Dracula is a 19th century doctor whose job is to save lives. Yet he murders women in crimes of passion by piercing their necks. He's aroused by the flow of their blood. Let me give you a glimpse of this Dracula at work with a reading from the book by the author.
I pressed forward until I felt the curve of her buttocks against me, and using this as a fulcrum, I arched her backwards bit by bit until I felt her chin and turned her face aside. At the last moment, she made as if to shake me off, but the cruel thorn of the Turkish dagger pierced her throat. I thrust and pulled, and the blood spurted from her in a great fountain, and I felt a surge of exultation, an ecstasy which I can compare only to the expression on the faces of saints at their moment of martyrdom. Then, suddenly, she was a dead weight, and would have toppled into the mud if I had not caught her and slowly lowered her to the ground where it was dry. I stooped to kiss Estelle farewell, without sensation in my lips. I was emptied and numb. The moment had passed too quickly. I felt cheated. Already the blood was forming into glistening clots, and signs of life as usual were reforming about me. Crows cawing at the edge of the wood, the muffled sound of cowbells, the gurgle of the river, the gradual fading of color as dusk fell, the surreptitious movement of the animal which had attracted Estelle's attention as it went about its business in the undergrowth. It had been too short. The event was like a rock hurled into the river, a violent splash, and then the water closes over it. Life flows on.
I'm wondering if any of that comes from your work with the criminally insane, a sense that the thrill that they felt in the act of murder passed too quickly and frustrated them.
It's totally mystifying to them. That's what I take from it. When I have seen them, it's often been within the first 48 hours after they committed the crime, and they're dazzled. They can almost—they can hardly believe what they've done. That the person, often the person that they've loved, is gone, and they have done it. It's a mysterious act to them.
So you find when you've interviewed people after they've committed a crime that they're mystified by their own actions.
Yes, they're almost numb and bewildered, I think would be the best word.
Have you interviewed people who've committed murder who, like the person in your novel, enjoys seeing blood flow, actually finds that quite thrilling?
I have seen rapists who have done that. Sometimes they see the blood as almost a proxy for human emotion, and they need to extort that from their victims.
Tell me more about what criminals have told you about blood.
It gives them a thrill. It's almost like a sense of achievement, I think, that here is proof positive of the act. It's, you know, if you raise a bruise or even if you stab somebody, you don't really see the result. But here it is, if you open someone up and see them gushing, particularly if you hit an artery, it's almost like this is the real thing.
Another way that blood figures into your novel is through self-mutilation.
Yes.
One of Dracula's first victims is a woman who mutilates herself. And he wonders, is this desperation or a perverse courage, or is it some wild abandon? I found myself wondering if those were questions you asked yourself after watching perhaps patients who had mutilated themselves.
Yes, it's very common in a certain condition called borderline personality disorder. And when you admit patients into hospital, one of the things that you do is you look at their forearms, and that will tell you almost their history, because in some, and it's usually women, you'll see tracks, razor tracks, transversely across their forearms where they've cut themselves. And this occurs when they're feeling unreal, or when their emotion is so intense it almost blows out fuses for them. And they cut themselves, and the sight of the blood, this is what they tell me, the sight of the blood brings them back. It centers them. It brings them, it makes them feel real again.
Can you explain why?
I think it is something very basic. It's almost like life spurting out of you, it flowing. It's hot and warm and so bright and intense. What could be more lively than the sight of blood?
So you must have really thought about blood a whole lot while writing this book.
I thought about blood a bit. I thought mainly about the wounding. I've been troubled by how vampires get into people's necks, because it's really very difficult to do it with human teeth, even fangs, I would think.
Of course, vampires don't have human teeth. They have, you're right, they have fangs.
But fangs, you know, are used for ripping and tearing. They're not good for puncturing. When I was an intern, as part of my training, I was involved in a lot of neck surgery. The neck is really a tough part of the body to get into. The skin is like rubber. It jumps away from what you're trying to push into it, even a scalpel. You have to hold the skin tight. You have to press down. I think it would be very, very hard to get into someone's carotid artery. I think it's doable because the human jaw is so strong. It can bring such pressure to bear at its point of teeth. But I think you'd need more than just determination. You need a real passion to get in and get the blood. It would have to be very, very exciting for you to do that.
Oh, well, of course, for a vampire, it's essential.
Essential.
Their existence depends on it.
Yes, it's a nutritional requirement.
But now, in your novel, the Dracula character doesn't use his teeth. He uses a knife or a shard of glass.
Right.
So was that for technical reasons? Because you couldn't imagine physically a human teeth penetrating.
I can imagine it, and I think Laszlo gradually works towards that. Laszlo is an apprentice killer. He discovers his true passion almost by accident when he kills his first victim in a vengeful rage. But it's almost like developing a taste for rare Scotch whiskey. He develops himself. He finds something within himself. There's a strand. And he goes along that strand deeper and deeper into his evil nature. So I think the first few killings are technically correct. They're glass, they're knives, but he works more and more towards his own center, which is to tear and bite and suck like an animal.
Did you ever have a patient who thought that they were a vampire?
Yes. I'm not sure whether it was real or whether he assumed that identity in prison to be scary, which is very important to be in prison, of course, and it certainly gave him a certain reputation. But he was a guy that bought blood from people.
He bought blood from them?
Mm-hmm.
How did he do that?
Well, you can buy most things in prison. It's, you know, you open up a vein and out it comes.
What did he tell you about why he needed the blood?
He liked it. I think it's one of those just, you come to the end of the road and that's that. You know, that's, sex is like that. You know, why do people like certain things? I think it's, you know, the concrete is wet for a while, and then somewhere around 16 or whenever you think it happens, the concrete sets, and those are your kinks, whatever they are.
My guest is psychiatrist Roderick Anscombe. He's the author of the new novel, The Secret Life of Laszlo, Count Dracula. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Roderick Anscombe, author of the new novel, The Secret Life of Laszlo, Count Dracula. He's a psychiatrist who has worked with the criminally insane. How did you start working with the criminally insane?
Well, I had been working with psychotic patients pretty much all my career, and I wanted to do the most difficult. I wanted to work with the most dangerous, most psychotic, most disturbed people, while I was relatively young, while I could, you know, absorb the buffets of a maximum security. And so I went to Bridgewater State Hospital, and I was assigned a special unit where they had the most dangerous patients in Massachusetts, and I loved it. Wonderful.
What were some of the crimes people were there for?
Well, most of the people who had killed people would go through my unit. It was also an evaluation unit, and people who have recently murdered are at high risk for suicide, so they need to be in observation. They need to be observed acutely, because murder is a devastating, I mean, I don't want to make excuses for these people, but murder is a devastating psychological trauma for everybody.
So what was your job?
My job was to treat people who are psychotic, and some of these men would be mentally ill and some would not. They were sent there for evaluation, and part of what I was to do in some instances was to evaluate them to see whether they were responsible for what they did or whether what they had done was really a manifestation of sickness.
This is always a line I find it hard to draw. I mean, not that anyone's going to ask a person like me to draw it, but I mean, in my mind, anyone who commits murder's got to be a little nuts, right? So what's the difference between somebody who commits murder because they're sick and somebody who commits murder because, well, they're not sick, they did it for another reason?
I think when someone commits murder when they're sick, it's pretty obvious. If you or I kill someone who we believe is the devil, who is stealing our thoughts, and that person turns out to be whoever they happen to be, I think most juries are going to see that as fairly obvious. I think when someone is in a manic state and unable to control their rage, that's more of a gray area. And then there are people who are simply drunk, as a lot of murderers are, drunk and kill people, and often they don't even remember what they've done.
When you would interview somebody to evaluate whether they were insane or not, what kind of questions would you ask in the interview?
You go very, very carefully through the events, almost second by second, and looking for opportunities. Could this man have done this differently? Did this man have the capacity to understand the true nature of what he was doing? And one of the things I wanted to give Laszlo throughout the book is the capacity to understand. I wanted him to understand what he was doing. So in the evaluation of these people, you go second by second, you know, hand movements, foot movements, very meticulous reconstruction of the crime.
One of the things that you have your character Laszlo Count Dracula say in the novel, after, you know, as he thinks to himself about the murders that he's committed, he says, "It is love, we monsters tell ourselves. We love too ardently, too anciently, too honestly, too bestially." But he's kind of explaining his crimes as crimes of passion, that he loves in such a grand way that this is what happens. Did you come across patients who you were evaluating, criminals who you were evaluating, who also saw their crime in those terms?
Yes. I remember one man who was terribly depressed and thought that the world was such a cruel, heartless place that he wanted to save his family from it. And that clearly, that they didn't die, but they were almost dead. That was clearly an act of love. That was someone who was psychotic at the time, of course, not like Laszlo. But I think psychotic people are capable of very heroic acts. They're terribly misguided, but acts of great courage.
It also seems sometimes acts of great logic, but the logic is a very personal logic that isn't logical to anybody who's sane.
Yes, they start from different premises.
Did you find that a lot of people who you worked with had remorse for their crimes?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Real remorse, as opposed to remorse they were faking for you or for the authorities.
Oh, real remorse, because most a lot of people kill the person that they love the most. You know, it's a man killing his wife or girlfriend. or often a man killing one of his parents when they're psychotic. So not only have they committed a terrible crime, not only are they going to spend the rest of their life in prison, but they are also bereaved. They've lost the person who matters most to them. So it's a terrible, terrible crime.
For Laszlo Count Dracula, in your novel, murder and the taking of blood has a strong erotic charge.
Oh, it's the sex act for Laszlo. This is the charge. It's the sex at the point of death, the last thrust, the last gush of blood, yes.
Is this something you learned about through your work with the criminally insane?
No, they don't do that.
Why not?
Generally, I think there's some torture sometimes that people do. There's a need for pain in sadistic sex killers. I've seen that. I think it's not so much blood, it's the cries of pain and the pleading for mercy. I think that it's more of an emotional equivalent rather than the physical side of blood.
So what led you to create a character who is sexually aroused by blood?
Because I loved the legend. I thought the Dracula myth was wonderful, so atmospheric and so moody. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to take that story and just turn it upside down, to have all the expectations of the audience going completely the wrong way because they're thinking of the myth, that all their expectations are headed one way and the story is going completely the opposite way, that Laszlo is not a monster, he's human, that there's a stake that goes in, but it's very hard to bang a stake in, and that he goes for blood, but it's not for nutrition, it's for something more earthy, more human, I think. Not a monster, a man.
Now you're working at a hospital where people have been diagnosed as being a danger to themselves or others.
Mm.
And tell us a little bit about your work there.
Well, these are people who have not responded to treatment with other doctors at other hospitals. So they're people who are going to be in the hospital for a longer period of time. They're very challenging patients. They're people for whom the illness has oftentimes become a way of life. So you have to, as it were, infiltrate. That you're kind of a mole. You have to get in under the defenses and under the delusions.
Now, do your patients know that you've written a novel set in the 19th century about a murderer who's related to to the myth of the vampire?
They wouldn't believe it.
They wouldn't believe it?
They didn't believe that I had written a book about Dracula.
Well, why not?
Well, I guess it's hard to reconcile the Dr. Anscombe on the ward with a writer who would write something gory like that. I try to be reassuring.
You tried to be reassuring after they found out about the novel?
Right.
What, that you weren't really loopy or flirting with terrible things?
Terrible things, yes.
And are they reassured?
I think they're intrigued. I think they're very intrigued. They kind of like the idea, this is my impression, they kind of like the idea that I might have a secret life or have something a little bit loopy, as you say. It makes for a commonality.
I wonder what you make of the popular fascination now with serial killers.
I think it started off as something ununderstandable. I think that people saw what they were doing and they couldn't understand how any human being could do these things. And I think it was a need to explain this part of human nature. And I think what we've ended up is we've extended our concept of human nature, our idea of what should we say, normal, regular guys do, has been extended over towards the left. Regular guys kill people. Regular guys commit serial murders. Regular guys are sadistic killers. These people are not mentally ill in the sense that doctors use the term. And I think what has happened is this fascination, who are we? What is a human being? And part of the answer to that question is a human being is also a killer.
You know, when I walk down city streets now, I can't help but think that there's a lot more crazy people than there used to be. And I think that's in part because of crack. You know, there's just a lot of people who are either very high or very in need of more drugs who are on the streets and confronting people asking for money or food or whatever. But I wonder if in your work you ever feel that more people are psychotic now than before, or if you're seeing the result of drug use in your work.
Well, I think they're more visible. I think they're out on the streets more because they're not in hospitals. They've been discharged for various reasons, mostly political, unfortunately. But I think you're right about crack. Crack is terrible. Crack is dehumanizing in a way that a lot of mental illness is not. I've seen people who've killed because they're looking for money for crack. I've heard of people stealing from their money from their families. They've almost lost their humanity through crack. It's a terrible, terrible affliction.
In what ways do you think crack can be more dehumanizing than mental illness?
I think that in crack, you narrow down to one thought and one feeling and one desire and one goal. And I think in mental illness, there are different kinds, of course, but the one that matters most to me perhaps is schizophrenia. I think that is a great struggle to remain human and to keep your emotions and to keep the faith. There's a terrible struggle for the soul in schizophrenia between the hugeness of delusions to talk directly to God versus just to be a human being, just to be an ordinary Joe. And I see that as a great heroic struggle, whereas crack, I think, is a diminishment.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Dr. Roderick Anscombe is the author of the new novel, The Secret Life of Laszlo Count Dracula. He teaches at Harvard Medical School. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.